Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to interesting people from all over the world about their interesting experiences and the lessons they have learned. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I am based in Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful Grand Canyon state, where I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. Our guest today is James Badman. James Badman offers 30 years of experience in animal management in a variety of settings and as a successful business owner. He serves as the Associate Director of Facilities and Operations at Arizona State University at the Department of Animal Care and Technologies. His strong dedication to work within the animal industry is rooted in his lifelong passion for animals, which includes working with a wide range of animals from tortoises to warthogs. James possesses expert knowledge and skills in all facets of exotic animal licensing, handling, management, breeding, and transport. As an entrepreneur, he founded and established three businesses, including Red Mountain Conservation and Education Center, a USDA, Department of Agriculture, a USDA licensed exotic animal pet store named Wildside Pets, and he managed the Phoenix Reptile Expo, one of the largest reptile expositions in the United States. You can learn more about James Badman on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Hello, James. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Siebe. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on this episode. Your wisdom has a lot to do with animals, and I have to say, I like animals. I have a dog, and many people like dogs and cats. In your case, your focus is on exotic animals and reptiles. That's serious business. Where is that passion coming from?
It's been a lifelong passion. I mean, since I was a kid, I've always been interested in working with animals and going out in nature, seeing them, you know, getting the opportunity to work directly with them, house them. And then as I got older, the fascination really became about breeding them and long-term maintenance of them in captivity.
It's fascinating. And we'll talk more about it as we go through this episode. But do you have any favorite animals? Because you deal with so many. Do you have a favorite or more than one favorite, perhaps?
Absolutely. I get asked that question a lot because I work with a lot of animals and it seems so diverse. Obviously, I've had a lifelong passion with tortoises. I really have just had a fascination with them since I was young. And I like exotic swine, as you mentioned, warthogs in the, you know, being able to work with them and Red River hogs and some of the wild type swine has just been a pure joy of mine.
Very interesting. And again, we'll talk more about that as we go through your 10 lessons. But before we get to the 10 lessons, I'm kind of curious. I want to ask you this. Lessons that you have learned in life and in your career, is there a lesson that you have learned that you would like to teach yourself if you would be 30 years old right now?
Absolutely. You know, this has been a great exercise for me, a great time to be able to reflect. And, you know, when I was thinking about this, I thought to myself, one of the lessons that I felt like I learned later that I wish I would have known earlier is it's not always about being right. Sometimes we have to just make sure or prove that we were right. And in the end, it has done nothing. You know, it proved nothing. And I remind myself, it's not always about being right. Sometimes, you know, there's compromise and not sometimes, a lot of times there's compromise and we need to be able to work together. And in doing so, you know, it's not hitting someone over the head saying, I'm right, you're wrong. You know, it's what can we do to work together?
Yeah. I was thinking here because I like what you're saying and you're not always right. Finding a compromise, it's hard to escape sometimes talking about politics. Yeah. In any country, not just because here in the United States, but all over the world, seeking a compromise, that seems to be something that is very difficult for many people, even though if that's a goal from the start to say, hey, we may not agree, but we have to find something in common because we have certain goals that affect all of us, then, you know, it's a great skill to have. So let's move to your lessons. And,
sure.
And lesson number one, value friendships. What are your thoughts behind that?
So this one was number one for me because, you know, the interesting thing was, you know, we met through a mutual friend and this person was a long-term friend, not just a friend, a mentor of mine. And so many times I have needed help or direction or, or sometimes it's just a friend that's pulled me back and said, hey, maybe take a moment and let's look at this. But, you know, they've been there when I've needed them. I try to be a good friend and be there when they need me. And in doing so, been fortunate enough to be able to help people out and also received help. So to me, we get to choose our friends, and I do, and I value them. And I feel like, you know, you and I have become really good friends, and it's because we had a mutual friend that we both had a tremendous respect for, and was at a time when he needed help and we were able to help him. And because of that, it's a reminder to me to value them and to some degree treasure them, you know, because I appreciate everything that friend did for me as a mentor. And I know I'm where I am today because of the investment he made in me.
Very powerful. And of course, I know, let's say, the details of what you're talking about. Friendship is a two-way street, right? It goes on both sides. And giving it a little variation, James, but when I think of some of my pets, I consider them my friends.
Absolutely.
And obviously, it's different than a human relationship, but I think for many people, dogs and cats, but perhaps in your case, again, beyond that, when it comes to tortoises, for example, is there something that you, as a professional animal expert, that you have with certain animals that you say, yes, we are friends? Would you use that definition? It's different than with people, we understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And different animals respond differently to you, but they are dependent on you when they're in captivity, 100%. And so I think that there's an absolute bond that happens with a lot of animals and species. And I know some people are probably, you know, thinking tortoises, how can there be a bond? But when you go out to the pens and they start running up towards you, and they associate you, of course, with food, and there may be some anthropomorphism going on, but you know that, you know, they're coming to you, they look to you for their needs. But, you know, I absolutely think that you can develop a bond with your animals for sure. And especially I have dogs and cats as well. And, you know, mine gets all excited when I get home and, you know, knows that she has to go out with us. You know, we have a little poodle and go run around in the yard and, you know, I think look forward to it and definitely seeks companionship.
Yeah. Very, very important. I appreciate what you're saying. Let's move on. Lesson number two, never give up on your passion, even if it must be sidelined for a minute. Now, your passion has to do with animals and exotic animals. How do you explain or give an example of the passion that you're talking about here?
Well, you know, I always felt like I knew what I wanted to do, but sometimes getting there, you know, took education and time to get the education or a skill or, you know, sometimes I had to leave, you know, the animal industry in general to, you know, when I moved to get reestablished in a place. And you know, sometimes you're just down and you're like, man, I feel like I've gotten so separated from it, but I knew what I wanted. I knew what my goal was. And sometimes to obtain it, you have to sideline the passion. But I felt like I did everything I could to stay connected to it. But I have two daughters and both of them are in college and they're telling me, Dan, it feels like I've been going to school forever. And I'm like, I know, but this investment will pay off. And you will get there. I remember feeling that way for sure. Or like I said, when I moved and I had to kind of reestablish myself and you felt like you were starting at the bottom again and just not connected to the community or the animal community in my case. And you know, it's not losing that drive or passion to get back to it. But sometimes we do have to step away from it to fulfill other needs.
Yeah. It's a very important point because indeed, I think for most people going through life, yeah, we have certain passions, but we cannot necessarily put our time and effort into it because of other things that we are committed to. But that passion, I would think, remains deeply inside, right? And,
yes.
And if I think of, let's say, people who are into a certain type of sport, whatever the sport may be, when they're young, they're actively involved, they're playing that sport, competing in that sport, perhaps. And as we grow older, physically, perhaps we can no longer be involved, but watching those games and understanding the mindset of the participants in those games, even if that's, let's say, beyond our generation, that passion stays, right? So passion
Absolutely.
Will stick with you. Yeah, I think that's a good point to make. even if you have to sometimes take some distance from it, because that's...
Yeah, and sometimes your role changes in what you're doing or that you play in your passion, you know, and yours was a perfect example. And sometimes I feel like I'm going into a mentorship role now, and a lot of what I do is very physical, and, you know, it gets harder when you get older. So,
yeah, no doubt about it. Well, let's take a look at lesson number 3. Someone has done it before you. Find them, learn from them. Please explain.
So I was very, very fortunate. I've had, you know, at least 3 mentors that really took me in and invested in me, and they could see what I was trying to do or wanted to do. They knew, or I knew what I wanted to do, but sometimes that road isn't clear. You know, sometimes you're uncertain, or even as if this is, you know, a good job, or knowing what your end game or your goal is. And I, like I said, I was very fortunate. I had, you know, 3 main ones, mentors, and they, especially one of them, so free with information and knowledge, because there's competitiveness in any industry, not just mine or the animal industry. So sometimes you're like, you know, people don't always tell you everything or all the facts, and you know, you're down a path sometimes, and I'm working with a species and I may be struggling with them or whatever. And there have been, people have done it before me. And I'm, even to this day, you know, there's a species of bird that we've been working to raise, and it hasn't gone well for us. And I reached out, I found an article I'd love to read, and dove into a book and found an article that led me to a person that has had some success. And so I, you know, great thing was email and Google. You can almost find anybody these days. And I was able to track a person down. And, you know, I kind of believe in that 6 degree of separation.
There's your passion, right?
Yeah.
I like to read. I like to do the research because that's your passion.
Yes.
Now, on that lesson, someone has done it before you. And you mentioned you've had 3 mentors helping you, guiding you, supporting you. You also say, find them, learn from them. Now, I can think of many individuals who haven't had the advantage of having mentors, especially mentors reaching out to them and say, hey, I like what you're doing. I've done this before. I want to help you, guide you, etc. When you talk about find them, learn from them, where do you find the mentor? And how do you make them your mentor? Because you can find people that are very professional at what they're doing, but are they willing to spend time in guiding you?
Siva, that's a great question. So I would, you know, look into organizations or clubs, associations that promote the industry that I'm in. That's what I did. One of the mentors I met through a friend. One of them, I would make sure to get out and go to events where he was speaking or whatever. And I joke with Kirsten, my wife, you know, I think it was that pesky kid that nagged him all the time. And he finally was like, this one's relentless. I need to maybe just talk to him and just maybe, you know, settle him down a little bit and then he'll go away. But I also believe they feel or at least I feel when I find a young person like myself that has this passion, it's like, I need to invest in them because they're the next generation. And I have an actual appreciation when someone has that drive or passion, or that drive in the passion that I had, because I know some people, it's like, oh yeah, I'm an animal person, but you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to get dirty. I don't want to work outside, you know? And it's like, you know, this is what we do. And so I think that, or I know all 3 of them appreciated my drive and interest in what we do and the seriousness that I took to it. And so I know they appreciated that, but like I said, one of them, I had to really keep, you know, getting out there, putting myself in front of them so they knew I was there. Where another was, I just showed up, met through a friend, and we started talking, and we realized we both had similar backgrounds and interests.
I like it what you're saying, that indeed, you know, to reach out and be proactive based on your passion. It kind of leads into lesson number 4. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Any thoughts, example on that?
Yeah, you know, in our industry, things can go sideways pretty quick. And there's been times where I'm like, how did I get here? Why didn't I stop myself? Why, you know, why didn't I stop and ask for help? And I know this person knows about this species or could have been giving me direction. And, you know, not all of us know what is going on. You know, a lot of people don't know what's I'm personally doing or going on in my life. And so it may not be obvious I'm struggling. I think we're quick to go, people should have seen I wasn't doing well or struggling. But I think that we also have an obligation to ourselves to say, to pause and say, hey, you know, I think I'm outside my realm of expertise. I need another tool in my toolbox. I need to find help or get someone to help me. In my case, with the species I'm working with or life in general, I think there was a stigma to you're not a very good or strong person if you need help. And it's like, none of us know how to do everything. And so I appreciate when people reach out to me help, and I'm not quick to go that they should know better, you know, stuff like that. It's like, I've done this a long time. I have a few more battle scars than the rest of them, you know? And so what may be obvious to me may not be to others. And so again, it was like we were talking about a few minutes ago. I think roles are changing a little bit. I'm in a position now to be mentoring and helping others and want to make sure I'm doing that.
You make some great points, James. Indeed, when do you ask? Sometimes perhaps it may feel like it's too early to ask for help. Sometimes it feels that, well, after the fact, I should have asked for help earlier. So you're basically too late. In your mind, when are you on time?
Yeah, that, I mean, a great question, because sometimes it's just not obvious you're underwater. And I agree, it won't help be too far in a problem. But, you know, I try to, as soon as I feel like something's going sideways, take a moment and evaluate, go, you know, am I on course? Do I need to make an adjustment, and do I need help? It's a way I approach things, but I think that because again, I feel like there's a lot of times I've seen situations where I'm like, I could have helped this person. I could have done several things. You loaned them stuff or whatever. And whatever the situation is, and said, hey, here, use this or take this. This will help you. And I think that's part of passing on the knowledge too, and or being a mentor.
Exactly. Being a mentor. And that's what I hear and value greatly in you, because yes, you have learned that it's okay to ask for help and don't be afraid to ask for help. At the same time, you make it clear, I think, to our listeners that you are there to help. You take the initiative. If you see people that are on your team or in your network, and perhaps you observe them as maybe not doing so well, it sounds like you are the one that will reach out to them to say, hey, can I help, or let me help you with this or with that. Am I correct in making that sort of observation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's almost, you know, almost human nature. We don't necessarily want to see people struggle. We want to help. But I will say it's not always obvious. And that's why it's important to make sure your needs are known as well. But absolutely, I don't want to see people struggling. So if there was something I could do to help someone, you know, I know I'd want to help, because sometimes it's just time that fixes things. It's not like they're asking for financial help or anything other than my time or a suggestion or a loan of a tool or crate or whatever, you know, and stuff that could be easily remedied.
Would you say that most people are like that, or maybe not? Because I can see a lot of things that are not going well in societies, and there are people that are in a great position, whether it's financially or in other areas. Not everyone seems to have the need to reach out to other people and help them. Does that make you unique, or at least in a minority category of people that say, I do that automatically?
I want to believe that it's the majority, and it's humankind, that if we were seeing someone struggle in a crowd, we'd go over and want to help someone. But, you know, you're absolutely right. It's the mob mentality that can sometimes be not friendly to an individual or minority or for, you know, a situation. But in general, I want to say, you know, I'd hope that most of us would want to help someone that we saw struggling.
Yeah.
Especially someone on our team or in what we do. You know, I know there's competitiveness. I know, but, you know, in the end, I would want to see, you know, especially my friends, my community succeed. I don't know that I'd find joy in seeing someone fail.
Oh, and it's definitely wisdom. But thank you for sharing that thought process and that lesson, of course. Lesson number five, we all report to someone. Lots of thoughts come to my mind when you say that, but let's start with your thoughts.
You know, when I was younger and working for a couple of facilities, every Friday night, all of us would get together, you know, all the employees and stuff, we'd get together. And as you're socializing, it always comes up and you're talking shop. And it's the, you know, if I ran the show, this is what I'd be doing tonight, and I'd be doing this and this and this and this, right? And I'm sure my employees do it about me. I'm sure the folks that are coming up under me are doing that. And I think what we all realize and in looking back, and I, again, it's something Kirsten and I have talked about before. We worked at a couple places together. You know, I've even gone back and said, if I ran the show back then, I would have done exactly what those bosses done, because they report to people. They're under, you know, financial pressures, or from under pressures from above. And a lot of what they're doing that we don't see is what's keeping the company alive, keeping the place afloat, keeping them within regulatory boundaries, you know. And now, being in the senior position at ASU, owning my own companies, I'm that decision maker. Like I said, I'm sure, you know, it's being said about me, because I'm not always sharing, hey guys, we're lean, we're in low cash mode, or, you know, it's been a slow summer or whatever. And I'm not here to share the stress of the company on them, but it affects my decision-making process, you know. And everyone thinks to themselves, oh, he's the owner, he doesn't report to anyone, he's just making these decisions, and they're not always the best decisions. And as an owner, you know, if I have no customers, I have no business. I see it even in the political climate. Oh, he's the president, but he reports to all of us. And if we're unhappy, he will not be reelected. And I think everyone thinks, oh, this person's at the top and we're just at their whim. And that's not the case. And that was an interesting lesson for me to learn.
I don't know if you put it in that perspective, but if you look at whether they are students or customers, or perhaps even in your case, your animals. Well, you don't report to the tortoises, I understand yeah. that, but they have certain requirements that you have to live
Absolutely.
Up to. And so we all report to someone, or at least in that sense, let's include the animals today, because that matters as well, right? I mean, it's not only the people above you and the people that they report to above them, it's just being responsible. So very, very interesting point. We're talking today with James Badman, a successful entrepreneur and university director with a lifelong passion for exotic animals, sharing his 10 lessons learned. I want to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to experience our program, 10 Lessons Learned, but also books and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. Again, that's audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned, all lowercase, to get your free 30-day subscription. All right, moving along, lesson number six. You are only on top for so long, so always look to improve or reinvent yourself. I like it, but please explain.
Well, you know, as a business owner, you do peak, and if you're not reinventing yourself, you peak, and then that starts to dwindle, whether competitors start doing what you're doing and pulling the market away from you to someone does something better. But in everything I've done, I've noticed that you do hit a peak, and like I said, you have to reinvent yourself. You need to move or change roles, maybe get more education. But I think there's always something that you can do. I would say make sure you enjoy your success, but be aware that you know to continue that success, you definitely need to be reinvesting back into some form of change.
Now, you have been actively involved in the animal industry for 30 years. What's your next move, your next career? And we'll keep it confidential with, I don't know, a few thousand listeners. But are you looking yourself as well as moving on and reinventing yourself perhaps into the future?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of what I do is based on my interest, but you know, there is a financial side. I do have to raise some species that, you know, bring money into the farm and stuff so that I can afford to do what I'm doing. And sometimes that's, you know, seeing what species people are interested in, you know, and it's cyclical. And I've always felt that if you do what you enjoy or you know, raise the species that you really enjoy or comfortable with, want to breed, you'll be in that cyclical cycle somewhere at some point, and you know, there'll be a demand for what you do. But it's really driven by my interest, but you can't do only that. Like I said, I do have to focus on species that are of interest to others. So, you know, it's the way the business rolls.
Makes sense. Lesson number 7. Wow. Remember that even when things are not going well, there is a lesson to be learned. I'm thinking 10 lessons learned. That's why we're here, right? But please share your thoughts on that one.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, sometimes projects are going sideways. I've been in a position where I'm like, or working a job and I'm like, this is not going well. And sometimes that lesson is, this is not what I want to do, or the species that I'm working for. You know, I live in Mesa, you know, right outside Phoenix. And so, you know, we have harsh summers and mild winters, and it's very dry here. And so to pick a tropical species that likes very cool weather would not be my best idea. But there's times we try different things and it doesn't work. And I tell myself, you know, I'm learning a lesson. I've learned a lesson. And this is one I've been able to teach my kids recently, where I've said, what one of them had a job, a position that she didn't care for. And I said, you've learned this is not the path you want to go down. This is not what you want to do. And you need to do a little correction and change. You know, you want to be in this industry, but not do this. And so, like I said, I always believe there's a lesson to be learned, even when it's not going well. And sometimes it's, I don't want to work here. I don't want to do this. Or, you know, this company wasn't a good company or to do business with, you know, so whatever that lesson may be.
Not putting you on the spot, James, but have mm-hmm. you ever dealt with failure in your life or in your career and perhaps lessons learned from that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's, I think some of my biggest lessons have been from failure. It does teach you a lesson. And I think you should not be afraid to try things worrying about failure. You should definitely put yourself out there, try something. If it fails, you've learned a lesson. You've learned what not to do. And sometimes it's just a course correction. If I would have done this midway through, I would have been successful. I don't go into something fearing failure. I go in hoping, you know, obviously for the best, but sometimes things don't work out.
Good point. Very true. Lesson number 8, put yourself out there. Not easy for most people, right?
You know, true. So I believe, myself included, you know, a lot of animal people, you know, we work with animals because we're introverts. We're not the one out there in a crowd of people dancing in the center of the crowd. We're the one on the outskirts kind of watching everything, doing everything. This is the hardest one for me. You know, it's not my thing. I'm comfortable with routine. I don't necessarily want change. And this is also one that I'm most proud of my daughters of, especially my youngest daughter, you know, very shy and overcame it and always putting herself out there. I'm impressed. And not only putting herself out there, I mean, giving 100% and trying, you know, and I feel that I need to do it more. You know, I feel like it's very, very important. And that's how you learn new things. That's how you meet new people. That's how, you know, you get new experiences. And I can't tell you how many times I've walked away going, one, it wasn't as hard. You know, you go into it dreading it. And I'm like, man, I don't know why I was dreading it. It was actually kind of fun. And I had a great time. I tell myself, you know, you need to put yourself out there. You got to try stuff. You got to, and something I wish I would have been more proactive at when I was younger doing, you know, and again, you know, very proud of my children for doing it, my kids, because they really, really, you know, I tell them all the time, you got to put it out there. Sometimes we have to do what we don't want to do, and proud for the experiences and things they have tried.
You say it so well, and obviously you have your proof from your own life career, but then when you talk about your daughters, it makes it even stronger. And it is uncomfortable for many people, and well, for everybody, I want to say, not everybody perhaps, but to reach out and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, put myself out there, like you say. But then afterwards, and that's what I hear from you as well, it's more like, yeah, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I had that experience. And sure, I can do it again and next time. And if you don't try it, if you don't put yourself out there, then you'll never know if that would have been a good experience or perhaps not so good. That can happen as well, of course, but you learn from it. And that's the point that you're making.
Absolutely. And I've always been so impressed. I have a really close friend that, I mean, he can enter a room and start talking to anybody. I've always been so impressed by that, you know, and you know, I'm fretting over how to start the conversation. You know, there you end up, I'll end up paired with someone who's not an animal person. And I'm thinking, that's all I know. That's all I, you know, I'm not that much into sports or anything like that. And so then you're like, I don't have anything to talk about. You know, this is not.
You know a lot more, James. There's no doubt about it. And we're learning from you. So definitely keep that going. Lesson number 9, you have to work to be happy. I'll let you start because I have questions.
I come into work every day and I greet my staff and they're always like, you know, man, you're always so happy. You start with good morning and you know we have an overfull day. You know, there's already, you know, you're going into it knowing there's too much work and not enough time and or we have some very difficult tasks or we have a very difficult conversation. And this was something that really was taught to me by Kirsten, you know, my wife. Don't dwell on the negative, stay positive. And you got to work to be happy. You got to work to go, okay, you know, yes, it is going to be a very full day. We're going to get through this. We're going to maybe have some fun doing some of it. And it's something that I think, you know, there are days it's hard to wear a smile, but, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm here to be rallying the troops and keeping everyone motivated and happy. And I remember as an employee was, you know, when the boss is unhappy and walks in and sets a bad tone, we all are unhappy and we know it's not going to be a good day. And no one wants to work like that. I mean, people, I can't keep employees or I can't. I'm thinking to myself, well, you're also one of the most negative people I know. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe changing the mood or the climate of the business or the atmosphere of the business. But I think just personally, overall, it does take work to be happy, you know, and if you're unhappy, it's like rooting out the source of that unhappiness, find out why you're unhappy and what you can do to improve your overall happiness. I've had jobs that I've hated, you know, or worked for the boss that I'm just like, you know, this is the most negative person I've ever had to work for. And the glass isn't half empty. It's half empty, cracked, leaking, you know, I mean, they can just find every reason why it's going to be bad. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to be here. I don't want to work here. And it definitely affects the way I feel. So I try to remember that. I walk in, you know, I greet everyone with good morning and had them say to me, what's good about today? And I'm like, you know, we're here. We're here to do what we need to do to get the job done and maybe have some fun during it.
Yeah, you have to be happy. So it makes sense to me. Number 10, we're there. 10 lessons. Give back when you can. I'm at this point no longer surprised that you bring that up as a lesson. And obviously, I'm curious about why giving back is so important to you. I don't disagree. Don't get me wrong. But clearly, that is important to you.
Yes, because I kind of feel like what I do is like a dying industry. We're not seeing the younger generation wanting to be in nature with working with animals. It, you know, I got so much out of it and so much joy out of it and appreciation. And in fact, both my wife and I, you know, we're both really animal people. And so I felt like we got so much out of it. I want to give back. And so we really support the 4-H and FFA programs, which I know this is an international podcast, but those are youth organizations here for agriculture, you know, for kids to work in agriculture with domestic animals and stuff. And so Kirsten and I really pour into those programs because we both got something. They were both starts for us as well. And if I can bring that joy or appreciation to a younger generation and get them involved, then maybe they'll stay in this industry and work it and find the passion that I have in it and be able to do it. And I think no matter what you do, it's part of giving back. I have gotten so much out of it. I've had a very full career and blessed with some successful businesses. And so part of that is, like we talked about before, you're only on top for so long. I would like to see others have the do even better than what I've done, or even, you know, find a breeder that is even more successful than me. That would really bring me happiness to know that I've contributed.
Again, a very important point. And I already hear in the success of perhaps people that you have guided, trained, parented, their success is a way of giving back to you.
Yeah.
Over time, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's where you get hopefully satisfaction that you say, wow, if I look back at what this person has done with your help, with your guidance, that feels good to you, of course.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent point. Excellent stuff. I have another question that I want to ask you. Are there any lessons that you have learned in life, in your career, that perhaps after time that you have unlearned, decided no longer, I'm going to do it differently? Does anything come to mind?
You know, I'm a very driven person, and I always found that I felt success in my accomplishments. And I guess more of a lesson that I'm trying to maybe not unlearn, but teach myself now is, you know, I really do need to slow down and enjoy what's going on, and you know, the accomplishments of my kids or Kirsten, or making sure that I'm not missing that. I, you know, it's the old, you know, was it stop and smell the roses, or, you know, and I feel that sometimes I'm so focused or driven and in knowing where I need to be. And so I've got blinders on and I'm not appreciating where I am now. And I feel like, you know, it you know, we're always learning, and it's a lesson that, you know, I'm telling myself now, you know, make sure you're, you know, it's something that I think you probably see as you're older. I feel like as I get older, I, you know, it's like, you know, did I miss something? Did I, you know, so, but I don't know if that's something I unlearned, but it's something I'm teaching myself now.
Well, you'll get there, but it's very valuable. And James, I want to thank you for joining us today and for sharing your lessons of wisdom with our global audience. It's much appreciated. I want to make some closing remarks. You have been listening to our international program, 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is produced, as always, by Robert Hossery and supported by the Professional Development Forum. Our guest today is James Badman, a successful entrepreneur and university director with a lifelong passion for exotic animals, sharing his 10 lessons learned. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned. That is podcast@10lessonslearned.com. I hope you will subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you, and stay safe.